Hello and welcome to the Susquehanna County Conservation District's Conservation Corner. I'm Don Hibbert.
And I'm Devin Voda.
And each week we bring you conservation topics and events from around the Endless Mountains. It's Eco News.
It is.
And we've got a couple of news stories for you I think you'll be interested in. But yeah, what did you actually find this week?
You want me to go right into my first story?
Sure.
Okay. So, first one I have here is how retention ponds and wetlands can actually be used in road construction to help minimize microplastics from tires.
You work in road construction,
right? I do.
Yeah, so fitting article for you.
It is. So, this study was actually done over in England, but it definitely can apply worldwide. They noticed that tires, as you're driving them, they obviously break down a little bit at a time. And all those little fibers that come off of them have to go somewhere.
Yeah, where do they go?
Right. So they were finding that a lot of them were washing off the road and into the rivers and right eventually into the ocean, creating even more microplastics than we realized.
Microplastics.
Right. So they actually did a study and they were able to find that by implementing retention ponds or a wetland feature next to a road, that'll help settle out those microplastics and keep it from going into the river or the ocean or wherever after that. So it kind of settles them out and we can collect them from there. It actually reduces it by 75%.
So they actually are collecting them too?
Yes. Or,
okay. Is that just in the study that they did or this is like real time harvesting of the microplastics?
I know at least for the study they were doing it. I'm not sure if it's going to be implemented like full-time with it. I would hope so that microplastics aren't just sitting in the wetlands and the
right,
ponds.
Yeah, because it's a valuable resource as well.
Right.
But if it's, in those little holding ponds, mm-hmm. which, I mean, you're implementing those on
right.
your sites,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. They're right. doing the same thing.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't know necessarily how it works more on like dirt roads like I focus on. I know like on paved roads they're gonna wash right off, but the dirt roads might hold on to those fibers a little bit more. But I mean either way, if we can kind of stop it from polluting our streams and that kind of thing, it's definitely worth it. England noted that like while they have some of these retention ponds, like it's nothing in comparison to the amount of roads that they have. So they're really trying to implement more of these wetlands and retention ponds along their road systems.
Well, that's a good one. It's encouraging that people are thinking long term like that.
Mm-hmm. What did you find?
Well, the first story that I found has to do with a local town.
Okay.
How familiar are you with Tunkhannock?
Very.
Yeah. Do some shopping there.
Absolutely, every week.
Grocery shopping, that type of thing. So you probably noticed that there's this towering mountain.
Right.
Over Tunkhannock, mm-hmm. Do you know the name of it?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, some people do, some people don't, but everybody kind of knows that really big mountain that mm-hmm. kind of looms, kind of looks over
right.
Tunkhannock. It's called Miller Mountain.
Okay.
And there's some good news. Hopefully you've heard it, but if you haven't, that's what I'm talking about today. So back, I believe it was in January.
Okay.
Miller Mountain was actually preserved for public use. It went through a series of sales, but Pinchot State Forest actually took ownership of the 2,500 acres.
Awesome.
It's mostly forested.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of gas pipelines that go through there, an old farm. But yeah, it's open for hiking and camping, for mountain biking, hunting, and just wildlife management and other passive recreational uses. So
that's awesome.
Super encouraging, but just a little bit of natural history on it. So Miller Mountain is actually the highest peak in the area.
Wow.
It's 2,216 feet high.
Wow.
It actually stands out also because it's not really attached to any ridge.
Mm-hmm.
Most mountains you find along ridge lines, but this one's singular. Mm-hmm. It's standing by itself. There's actually a Friends of Miller Mountain group that's been established, and they're there to aid the state. And they're also exploring possible trails for the mountain's natural treasures. So be on the lookout for that. I'm not sure whether it's on Facebook or whether it's just an active group that's meeting locally.
Okay.
But I'm sure if you look in the local papers, you might find some information about that. But yeah, just going back to the actual history of the mountain, and how it became this state forest. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know that at one time it was proposed as a ski resort.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if depending on your age, you might remember ski trails that were cut into the hill.
Okay.
And that was back in the 60s and 70s. A developer out of Philadelphia was looking to put a ski resort there. Ran into a couple of problems. The biggest one was that Eaton Township was a dry township, so they wouldn't let them get the liquor license.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't stop them from clearing the ski slopes. So they did that. That gentleman passed away.
Okay.
His son actually sold the property to a local businessman, Louis Naples,
mm-hmm.
which everybody knows for, I think he has some landfills and junkyards.
Right.
Eaton Township, again, was pretty leery about that transaction. So they proposed some other rules and whatnot to reduce the chances of it becoming a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
It got sold again after he harvested some timber to a Scranton-based real estate business.
Okay.
And they were the ones that actually set up a deal with the state, and that final transaction took place. So the deal was actually brokered by the Conservation Fund and financed mostly by a $4.5 million donation from Williams.
Wow.
So Williams is an energy company, you mm-hmm. know, in this area yep. who has a lot of pipelines, infrastructure. Yeah, but they actually kind of made it happen, which is awesome.
That's awesome to see a gas company really put an effort into preserving land as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So the other remaining funds, they came from the Keystone Fund. That was $500,000. And so now it's in the hands of DCNR and
awesome.
Open to the public. And really, I think Wyoming County has really made leaps and bounds as far as like public recreation
yeah,
land.
Yeah,
the
sure.
Bosberg State Park
mm-hmm.
and now Miller Mountain. So really encouraging that we have some new green space in the area mm-hmm. to, you know, hike or bike or whatever you want to do. But DCNR is still earlier in their planning stages. They haven't even set the boundaries for this state forest.
Okay.
But people are welcome to hike around on the established trails that were already there. There's some logging trails and ATV trails, the gas pipeline. But
awesome.
It's an amazing vista. I've seen the pictures and I want to hike it myself. But so, you know, feel free to recreate on Miller Mountain.
Awesome. So my second story today is some tactics to help hopefully save the eastern hemlocks, our state tree.
It's my favorite tree.
I love that tree. It's awesome. Yeah. As a lot of people know, it's been around for quite a while, the woolly adelgid, the aphid type insect that comes and makes home of the eastern hemlocks there and really just degrades them to the point of no return. Unfortunately.
Hemlock woolly adelgid. What's it look like to you?
Just a little white bug that dances.
Yeah, it's a little tuft of...
Yeah, almost like cotton. White.
Right, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just a little background on the woolly adelgid. It likely came to the United States in the mid-1900s and has been spreading and killing hemlocks by the millions ever since. They're pretty sure it originated in Virginia. So there's quite a few eastern hemlocks that got wiped out in Virginia. But they're really trying to take a stand now and come at the adelgid from multiple different angles to try and combat it and fight it, keep it at bay, save these eastern hemlocks. Very important tree.
It really is, yeah. I mean, it really shades, mm-hmm. you know, the local waterways.
Right.
Kind of sits in those lower valleys and cools down the water,
mm-hmm.
which promotes, you know, fish species
right.
and aquatic insects that don't like the warm water.
Right.
And helps them thrive. So,
mm-hmm. So they're kind of come at it from a couple different angles. One is with biocontrols. So in the past, they have released some beetles that were put out hopefully to kind of consume these adelgids and help keep that population back. They've been working, but they're also thinking about implementing a second species. So they're bringing it out from the western part of the country. They feast on adelgids out there, so they're hoping to bring them over here. And they propose no harm in any other fashion, which is good. So it is two different species of silverflies. Very, very tiny, about the size of a grain of rice. So hopefully won't bother us too much just flying around, but they love Adelgids. That's their main food source. So they're hoping to release those because the Adelgids have two egg producing life cycles each year. So those beetles really harbor in on one of those egg cycles, but it doesn't help the second one. So they're hoping that these silverflies can kind of supplement in there and catch that second cycle as well, because they like to go after the larva and stuff. So that'll be perfect for getting those aphids before they do anything.
That's good. It's a good idea, because I had noticed a while back, just because I like hemlocks in general, I had noticed that there is a western hemlock. And I was like, I wonder if, you know, they're suffering from the same hemlock woolly adelgids, and they didn't seem to be. I guess they're out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, there's this fly that's kind of, you know, at least producing like equilibrium. You know, some trees might, their immune systems are compromised or whatever, but these flies are helping them, so why can't they help the eastern ones?
Right. That's the hope.
So good.
So they have already been released in Virginia, so in a couple counties down there. They're hoping to start spreading them a little bit more widely, but they've noticed that they're already reproducing and really building their population up pretty quickly, so should help a lot with taking over on the aphids there. And then some other forms of attack that they're trying to rid the eastern hemlock of these adelgids. They are also using some chemicals, unfortunately. I mean, it does help. It's an insecticide, so it does help rid the tree of the adelgid for about 5 years or more. So it's a temporary solution, expensive.
That's what I was going to say. It's expensive, yeah.
Very time-consuming and really needs to be done correctly in order to help and not harm the tree as well. It is injected either right into the trunk or at the base of the tree in the soil.
Right, you do like a ring around the tree and tablets in the soil, yeah.
Right, but like we did mention, it's expensive. It only is like a temporary solution, helps for about 5 years or so. So it's one of those things you'd have to kind of really keep up on. So they're trying to help with more long-term defenses against the adelgid.
I think the ones that you mentioned, the chemical treatment, probably is better for people who have it in their own landscape around their house, right?
We only have one or two, not a whole grove.
You don't want your trees to die.
Right.
Versus, like, you know, stewardship of a whole forest, you know, 600 acres or so. Right. You can't afford something like that. Yeah. So
that's another reason they're kind of looking into more of like the biocontrol with the flies, trying to help versus something like this. They want to save whole groves of these hemlocks and not just singular trees.
Yep. Good.
So they also did find down in New Jersey, there was a stand of hemlocks that there ended up being a single pocket in there of them. That after the whole grove got attacked by the adelgid and died off, there was a couple that stood there and had no effect from the adelgid. For whatever reason, they were more resistant. They really can't figure out why yet, but they were able to take some clippings off of those trees, and now they're in a nursery, and they're being grown and propagated, I guess, into multiple different trees, and hoping to eventually have a large enough quantity that they can sell them and hopefully replant some forests with them.
That's good. I like that approach as well. They did that with the chestnut and the elm, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, any of the trees that have struggled. So, that's a good approach as well.
And then their final approach is that they also have some hybrids of a western hemlock and Chinese hemlock, kind of.
Coming together.
They did note that these are more for your landscaping trees, not necessarily to plant a whole new grove of hemlocks, but it's an option if you maybe want something in your yard that's more resistant to these adelgids as well. But overall, they're really trying to come together, fight it from different angles, whatever angle they can get.
Yeah, it's the holistic approach, which, I respect that.
Right. But overall, hopefully those silver flies really take off and help us around here.
Yeah. Well, that's a good article. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for finding that one. Mm-hmm. The final one that I have. So if you live in the Northeast, especially in Pennsylvania, we zero in on Endless Mountains. Chances are you drive by or you live next to a pipeline, mm-hmm. right? Or even a power line. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty much always a thing.
Right.
Everybody needs power, unless you're using like solar. Mm-hmm. But the big question is like, what to do with those areas, those corridors? Mm-hmm. A lot of them are created by cutting down big tracts of forest, right?
Right.
And I had given a presentation over the weekend to master gardeners talking about invasives moving to those areas and how it increases the prevalence of ticks.
Right.
Because you get those invasive shrubs. But I think the biggest thing, the struggle is like what to do with those spaces. They create edge habitat. They seem to reduce some biodiversity because
right. You
get a big tract of forest. And, you know, the species that like the deep forest, all of a sudden their habitat has been eliminated.
Right.
You know, it's been cut in half. Mm-hmm. And they don't like to move between that edge habitat or open space mm-hmm. and back into another forest because predators, basically.
Right.
So they don't want to get eaten. Mm-hmm. And so scientists are looking at creating new habitats
okay. With
those corridors. This is a good one. It's a positive one. So they're proposing pollinator patches, basically.
Okay.
And so they've looked at electric transmission lines and gas pipelines. You know, those in particular are the ones that they're zeroing in on. Like I said, the typical practice is just to either spray or trim or mow.
Right.
You know, and if you spray, there's a possibility of that going to the water. Affecting downstream microinvertebrates or, you know, fish populations, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's not a great approach.
Right.
Or it just soaks in the soil and it pollutes the soil. If you mow it, you cut down all the vegetation. For pipelines, you know, people urge the pipeline companies to put some clover mix in or whatever for the deer. And that's fine for a year or so, but mm-hmm. that disappears pretty quick. And then if you don't mow it, then those invasive shrubs come in. Mm-hmm. So they're proposing, like I said, a new method. It's called integrated vegetation management.
Okay.
You worked in vegetation management a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Before you came here?
Yep.
So what did you do exactly?
So I was on the power lines. I was more trying to keep them cut down and like any vegetation away from the power line, so we didn't want anything growing too tall or into the lines.
Yeah, so as far as like electrical lines, right. They have regulations mm-hmm. now that you have to keep them trimmed. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of monitoring those. So the new method integrates some of that legislation, and they start planting like the outer fringe as your taller prairie grasses, your inner corridor as your prime pollinator habitat. And it's worked out well so far. You know, if you think about it, provides food for pollinators such as bees and butterflies. Mm-hmm. Also, like egg-laying sites for ground nesting birds.
Okay.
Even insects and small mammals. There's spots there for basking snakes. I mean, it's a nice habitat.
Yeah.
When you come down and think about it, they figure that there's probably 60 million acres of right-of-way across the United States.
I could see that, yeah.
They actually say that it's bigger than the national park system.
Wow.
Which that puts it in perspective. And like I said, I put together a presentation over the weekend. I found out that there's 93,500 miles of pipeline right here in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Which I tried to put it in perspective for the group of people I was talking to. And I said, if you think about 93,500 miles, and then you ask yourself, what's the distance from the east coast to the west coast? It's about 2,800 miles. So you have to drive back and forth between the east coast and west coast 33 times.
That's insane.
To get 93,500 miles. And that's like, that's how many miles of pipeline we have in Pennsylvania. Just kind of sitting there encouraging invasives to move in or reducing habitat when we could be allowing thriving habitat to take place. So Baltimore Gas and Electric Company, they've installed 2,800 acres. First Energy has done quite a few different of their transmission lines. They've actually developed their own pollinator-friendly seed mixes.
Awesome.
And they actually have earned certification from the Right-of-Way Stewardship Council. So they're working pretty hard. Some other power companies and pipeline companies are getting into the game.
Good.
So it is taking hold. It is a relatively new idea. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why, but still, whatever.
Right.
And a fun side fact, I found out that Pennsylvania Game Commission, they actually did a study all the way back in 1953 on 3.5 miles of right-of-way through the state game lands. And this is in Center County. So they've been doing 70 years of continuous study on that little tract and have provided numerous amounts of data on just how valuable it is to promote pollinator species.
Right.
And what kind of animals move through those right-of-ways. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, a crazy amount of data.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been helpful in this study and establishing, you know, some criteria for what to plant as far as natives. So thanks to the Pennsylvania Game Commission for doing that. Yeah, so I don't know. I think we covered some pretty great stories here today.
Absolutely.
And hopefully you found some valuable information. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, before we forget, we are having one seedling sale pickup.
Yes.
If you ordered seedlings, trees, fruit trees, vegetables, that type of thing, don't forget it's at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Saturday the 20th is your pickup date from 9 to noon. Don't forget about that. Also, we have the Interpretive Trail Grant opening.
Yes.
Right here at the Susquehanna County Conservation District. That's on Earth Day, which is the 22nd, and that'll be at 10 o'clock a.m., and it goes to noon. We'll be touring the trail, interpretive points, there'll be a tree dedication, food, and we're giving away pollinator packets.
Yes.
Speaking of pollinators,
yeah.
If you're interested in wildflowers and growing them at your house, we're actually giving away packets of those so you can plant them.
Put them on your power lines.
There you go. Good idea. So, yeah, you're more than welcome to join us. There'll be a ribbon cutting at 10 a.m. And like I said, there'll be a tour of the whole Interpretive Trail, which it's pretty great.
Yeah, we're excited.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that does it for today's show then. If you have questions related to our shows, you can contact the Conservation District by calling 570-782-2105. If you missed a portion of today's show, you can go to our website, www.suscondistrict.org, and find our Conservation Corner page with past episodes and links to information about past episodes. You've been listening to the Susquehanna County Conservation District's Conservation Corner. I'm Devin Voda.
And I'm Don Hibbard, saying enjoy the outdoors.